Wait, first of all, what's perfect? What is perfect? What is allowable as a human being? Oh, please tell us, far left, since you seem to have a judgment on this, since you seem to hold any of us who regard the unborn child with dignity and protection as sort of, oh, like we're just beneath them, right? Like, what do you know? Move into the 21st century. Isn't that what they're telling us? You know, to go with their sense of eugenics, like the Nazi regime, right? Is that really where it is? Well, here's the thing. Every single human being is beautiful.
Yes, it is Friday, April 5th, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, Trump breaks the news that windmills cause cancer. Oh, and there are oranges in the Mueller report, if you didn't know. Socialists win big in Chicago. Chicago DSA members now hold 10% of Chicago's alderman positions. So why don't you put that in your pipe and smoke it, Rom? White power symbols found after a fire destroys part of the Highland Research and Education Center outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. Highlander was central in training folks for the civil rights movement. That's where Rosa Parks went for training, Martin Luther King. SDS was born out of there. Working Family Party back candidates win big in Milwaukee school board elections. They now control 5 of the 9 seats on the board. And that was a city that was going charter crazy. The birthplace of, what is it, the Bradford Foundation? Bradley Foundation? The ones that are kind of shopping charter schools all around the country? Very cool. That is good news in the wake of the loss of the state Supreme Court seat in the Badger State. Bernie Sanders led the field big time. The presidential candidates in fundraising with $18.2 million in the first quarter of reporting. And it says MSNBC's Casey Hunt tweeted out this week, which I was like, Casey Hunt, stepping up. All right. What she said was, quote, if we used any of the metrics, right, any other year and applied them to Bernie, he would be called a front runner. Like, came in second last time, almost won Iowa, won New Hampshire, nearly top of nearly early polls, huge fundraising numbers, proven appeal to the base of the party. And yet, he's ignored. It's absurd. Casey Hunt, everybody. And as Mayor Pete, here we go, Buttigieg. His presidential campaign shows surprisingly good fundraising numbers. A new poll shows that nearly 70% of Americans, this is good for Buttigieg too, 70% of Americans are just fine with a gay presidential candidate. Very, very cool. He's a little surprised, the sleeper cell, moving forward from the centrist wing of the party. And it was not such a good week from former Vice President Joe Biden, who's rapidly earning the nickname of Creepy Uncle Joe. In today's PA Focus, Pam Iovino, did I get that right, Sean?
Yes.
Iovino defeats D. Raja in a special election in PA 37th, that Senate district. It's the first major red to blue flip for the 2020 cycle that puts the Pennsylvania Senate in play. Iovino withstood the attack ads linking her to AOC, Bernie, the Green New Deal, university health care, support for abortion, and socialism. So in my mind, that says there's your winning message for 2020 right there. Thank you, Republicans. Mike Terzai. Yes, you heard him up top. Mike Terzai was caught calling pro-choice advocates Nazis. Really far left. And that was at a Real Alternatives Awards dinner. When he was called out on it, he said that his quote was taken out of context, Sean Kitchen. A new poll shows that Pennsylvanians are becoming increasingly concerned about climate change. Hey, what do you say to that, Governor Wolf? Still going with the drill, baby, drill approach? Not working. New poll shows that Pennsylvanians are also becoming increasingly concerned about climate change. I just read that, so I'm not going to read it again. Bernie Sanders agrees to do a Fox News town hall in Bethlehem, PA. And that's on April 15th. Yep. You bet it. It's tax day. and I am sure that is intentional. The Sanders campaign also hired Becca Raz from Jess King's campaign to run the Sanders National Field campaign. That's a huge, huge deal. Congratulations to the faculty and staff of the Community College of Pennsylvania, who have finally have a tentative agreement after 3 long years of negotiations. It was only when they were on the brink of striking that the city got serious about those negotiations. And the robots are coming. Well, they've actually been here for a while, at least in giant food stores across PA. But they will begin arriving in waves, according to Giant's parent company, Ahold Delhaize USA. USA. It's actually a Dutch company. UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers, is not fooled by the company's claims that the robots will not lead to loss of jobs. They'll just allow employees to do other things, like be nice to customers. And in December, you know, this falls on the heels of Walmart's rolled out of 360 autonomous mini Zamboni-like robots who clean the floors and collect data. Doesn't freak you out, I don't know what does. And according to a report by McKinsey Global Institute, as many as 800 million people may lose their jobs to robots by 2030. 2030. Incidentally, that's when kind of the climate crisis is going to hit its peak too as well, just so you know. And so what do you think? Can we get that UBI like yesterday? Yang 2020. And in today's last call, looks like the lunar South Pole is going to be a potential landing site for NASA's 2024 humans back to the moon goal. Why? Yeah, protection from radiation, but the promising potential for water ice, which means rocket fuel. Yep, Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Moon is officially becoming required reading.
So is that like Rita's water ice?
Exactly like that, Sean. Exactly. Comes in multiple flavors, too.
I like the chocolate brownies that it usually
There you go. There you go. Despite last week's ISS wardrobe malfunction, which prevented the historic all-women spacewalk, NASA says another medium-sized spacesuit is not likely anytime soon. Hillary Clinton got really pissed off at that. Get it done, NASA. And if you're getting a little uneasy about inaction on climate change, you might be comforted or horrified by this week's United Nations roundtable about creating, wait for it, floating cities. Yes, floating cities to handle mass refugees and the flooding of coastal cities. And you bet there's a company called Oceanics. No, this is not Peter Thiel's baby, right? Which makes it even more disturbing in my mind. That's got the plans. It's a company based out of Hong Kong. He who controls the spice controls the universe. Totally psyched that Dune is going into production. The new version of Frank Herbert's epic sci-fi series will be directed by Denis Villeneuve, who did an awesome job with the 2017 sequel reboot of the Blade Runner. And Sean has been playing with his new toy with awesome results. Check it out on Instagram. I want to shout out to my colleague Sandy Leonard and her co-creators for their really cool role-playing game, Magi Monsters. It's like a cross between Dungeons & Dragons and Pokemon. Very cool. It's available through DriveThruRPG after a successful Kickstarter campaign. Free Will is going to be releasing Akai Mash. I never. How do you say that, Sean?
Say what?
Akai Mash. On Saturday, that beer is going to brew with 850 pounds of acai puree, milk, sugar, and vanilla. And it comes in 7.5% ABV. And if you look for something different on this Wednesday is at Free Will is Toast to Cheese, where they are pairing locally produced cheese from Calkins Creamy in Honesdale, PA, with a bunch of Free Will beers and some specialty toast. My wife actually got a gift for me for my birthday a couple years back where we did this. It was actually a lot of fun. It's like down in the cellar, so it's pretty cool. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure you download the podcast, Rick Smith Show. It's a daily podcast. IPN, Podbeans, wherever you get your podcast. And I want to give a shout out to Paul. Paul, thank you for your little donation. I appreciate it. Every little bit counts. And Paul kind of stepped up and kind of gave us a little donation. I'm very psyched about that. That's going to go right into the kitty. And if we want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. And you can support Pull No Punches, Homegrown Progressive Media today. Do like Paul did. Drop us a donation, or better yet, become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/RCPress and choose your membership level today. If you're not ready to become a member, ragingchickenpress.org. Click on that big donate button, just like Paul did, and give us what you can. But remember, best way you can support what we do, $5 a month, become a member. Go to patreon.com/RCPress today. So, Sean, another big week in the big blue world.
I guess, right?
I mean,
Not much is going on.
Not much is going on, except there's just too much going on. I do have to say this. I did you see the I don't even want to spend too much time on this, but about the Trump's whole thing about windmills causing cancer?
I did not.
Dude, it was like you watch into stuff. He actually made the noise. It was going to be I thought about having that as a sound drop today, but I was like, you know what? I just really don't want to hear his voice anymore. He was going like
that humming noise.
He's like, you know what they say? His favorite, his favorite source that he cites, what they say, right? That's it. That's his citation. And you know what they say? The windmills now cause cancer. I guess it's the sound. And he goes, skeet, 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 skeet. Like, that's what they sound like.
Did he really do that?
Yes. Swear to God. It was crazy. And then when he was talking about, and I'll just mention this, we'll move on. But then
it's like I woke up yesterday morning and I just saw like the windmill jokes. And I'm
God, it was freaking unbelievable. I
saw like the woman getting questioned by the reporter, which was great. Like, and I just bothered not looking online for the full story because it's just like you see 20 seconds of that. You kind of get.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it is actually worth hearing him say it, right? I still am kicking myself. I didn't pull that sound just to play it because it was crazy. And then the other thing was like, when he was talking about the Mueller report and he was trying to say origins, did you see that stuff?
I did not.
He was like, he said it like five different times. He was trying to say, you got to look at the origins of the Mueller report, except he couldn't say origins. So he kept on saying oranges.
Like,
so you got to look at the oranges of the Mueller report. What I'm really concerned about is the oranges. And like, literally, you have to like, what is he talking about? What the hell is the guy talking about? Because there's no way that he was saying origins. He could not get that out of his mouth. So you actually had to figure out what the word is that he was trying to say. But it was like,
is he like Ronald Reagan at this point? Like with Reagan at the later years of his office, just being a manic like head case.
Look, compared to where Trump is, Reagan was sharp as a tack. Okay. Like, and I'm saying Reagan,
people were saying like Reagan was really bad towards the end.
He was very bad. But but this is Trump's normal.
Yeah.
Right.
Just like,
I mean, that's what's crazy. It's like Reagan's
worse is still a lot better than Trump's like normal attitude.
Right. I mean, Reagan, had a hidden diagnosis. Trump is just fucking off his nut job, walker rocker. But anyways, we got some cool news from around the country. This we had in Chicago. It was a big night for socialists.
Yes, socialists won. Like I think three or four members now were elected on. I guess in the runoffs that were happening. And now brings them. They control like 10% of the city's city council, the aldermanic council, whatever it is. No, it's pretty good. I was listening to a really good podcast. I started listening to The Dig by Dan Denver, and he had someone, was it not Jane McAlevey, but like, he was talking to someone a couple weeks ago. The podcast is a couple weeks old. I have to look it up. I don't know who it is, but basically like where these changes, it was Jane McAlevey because they were talking about the strikes.
Like, okay.
Like Chicago changed when the strike happened. The Chicago teacher strike.
That's right.
Like you can directly link and correlate these victories right now with the DSA. Or no, this is what Michael Utrecht actually was on a few weeks ago. So Michael Utrecht was saying that you directly correlate the wins with the Chicago DSA in the city council positions, directly link it back to the teacher strikes back in 2014, 2015, or was it 2000, or was it earlier than that? I think it was 2011, 12.
It was 12, I think, because it was after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So almost like a decade of organizing went into Chicago, and you're sound, with Rahm Emanuel being mayor, and you're seeing the fruits of that now, of like what happens when you organize your teachers in a way that, and how that community has changed you know, like the progressive community has gotten a lot more organized in the city.
Absolutely.
And Mike Utrecht was pretty much saying like the success of the DSA in Chicago would not have happened if it wasn't for the teacher strike, which I think is absolutely true and necessary to say.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And we would also say it's not, and it wasn't just like the random teacher strike, right? It's the years of organizing that preceded that. Right. I mean, so you basically had, you know, this is again, the thing we always got to keep our, you know, eyes on is that, you know, it wasn't just like there was a strike and that changed everything. It's like, no, there was actually years of organizing that took place to put the kind of to change the leadership of the teachers union. Right. To institute a new model, more aggressive, more militant kind of teacher organizing that also kind of did social movement unionism that actually worked with the local community, embedded in the community. And then they had the strike and then there's the follow up. So there's all this stuff. So not only did they strike, but they had an entire kind of like, you know, kind of ideology and organizing model to kind of move forward with that people looked at and said, hey, we got to, you know, this is where it's at. And the DSA, of course, is like, you know, that was the perfect mesh for them.
Yeah.
So freaking awesome. Freaking awesome. And, you know, like guys also out in the Midwest too, as well, we saw in Milwaukee, as I kind of mentioned up top, there was the school board there just got flipped, right? So five of the candidates that were backed by the Working Families Party got elected to the school board, which is a huge deal. Because like I said, that's Milwaukee is kind of really the center of the right wing think tank for the privatization. Well, I shouldn't even say right wing think tank, but say the charterization or privatization of public schools think tank that came out of the Bradley Foundation, which basically literally wrote the roadmap and gave out the manual, literally kind of passed around the country about how do you actually kind of charterize public schools. And so you just see that. And that's also kind of where Scott Walker came from. Right. Scott Walker kind of came right out of Milwaukee. And to see that the organizing that went on the ground to switch that is a huge deal. So kudos to the folks out there. Now, it wasn't so good at the state level when it came to the state Supreme Court. They lost that election, a special election or the regular election. And that's a huge blow because now a lot of what was on the slate to turn back what Scott Walker and his cronies have done is just it's not going to go anywhere because you still got a right wing court. So Supreme Court matters, man. Elections have consequences, like we've been saying.
Yep.
Crazy, man. So we also had a big week when it comes to presidential reporting, I guess, presidential campaigning and so.
Yeah, why stand for something when you could stand on something?
There you go.
That's going to be my new motto in life.
There you go.
Yeah.
Why stand for something when you can sit down? I thought that was your motto.
Give me exactly what I have or give me death.
Give me stasis or give me death.
We need to come up with some like radical like centrist memes for the 2020 campaign coming out of like Beto and Buttigieg.
Object at rest, stay at rest. Object in motion, stay in motion. Inertia. The power of inertia.
Yeah, but there's this guy named Bernie Sanders.
Who's he?
Some person running for president.
Yeah. I hear that he's got doing some,
pretty well.
Yeah, he's got some popularity going for him.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just too bad. He's doing pretty well, but he's nowhere near being a front runner, so that's the that's the thing.
But man, $18 million in the first quarter.
Yeah, $18.2 million. Yeah, it is. It absolutely. And he's you know, I mean, look, it's just been huge. And there's another poll that came out too as well that showed him he had basically a double digit lead over the next person, which was Kamala Harris. Double digit lead under among young voters, right? Which was a big deal, right? So I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot going on there. It is really fascinating. I think even Tom Perez was on the show, was on, I think, Chris Hayes the other day. And Chris Hayes pushed back on him a little bit, you know, about Bernie Sanders basically as a front runner. And Tom Perez, man, would not even kind of, you know, get any ground. Well, you know, he was trying to be like, look, he was trying to be, you know, saying, hey, look, we're going to let the process play itself out. This is kind of, it's good to have this out and all this kind of stuff. but without a kind of like an acknowledgement of, you know, Bernie Sanders. Like it's just one of these things that it's kind of interesting at the moment where you have like democratic socialism is on the rise, right? And then you have the you know, Bernie Sanders as that kind of like the standard bearer for that kind of trajectory. Bernie Sanders is on the rise at the exact time the National Democratic Party wants to say is like, eh, we don't have any favorites. We're just gonna let the process play itself out. So, well, you know, I mean, it's like, come on.
We don't have any favorites this year.
Well, that's what I mean, right? It's a, you know, it's like just an interesting coincidence. The interesting though thing is, we're at the National Democratic Party level. We'll see if they're actually what this actually means in practice. But they've been training organizers, right, all across the country. At least according to Tom Perez, what's going to happen is that whoever wins the nomination is basically going to get those organizers. So they're training people now on door knocking, on kind of like, you know,
good. I mean, you got to train these people on things.
But, no, that's I mean, I think it's a good thing. Right. Yeah. But we'll see. I mean, you know, I want to see what I really looking forward. I'm just looking for articles, trying to find some stuff on this. But what's that training actually entail? Right. And who's being trained. Right. That's what I'm just interested in. And that's a real question. I don't know. I don't have a secret idea there. I just don't know. So.
Yeah, and then I'm still waiting for someone to announce their campaign for president, but hasn't really happened yet.
You mean the creepy guy?
Old guy?
Sniffer?
I mean, yeah, I guess we got to talk about Joe Biden.
Oh, right, Joe Biden. Well, so, he's actually going to give a speech later on today to some kind of labor organizing organization. Was this supposed to be his like announcement today, or is that not going to happen yet?
I don't know. I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, he's giving some speech, and then people are expecting that he's not going to talk about all the kind of allegations that are kind of coming up here. And we should be clear about one thing, right? Just before we just kind of start jumping on Joe, is that most of the allegations that I've seen, at least, and I might be wrong, I might not have seen them all here, are more about like the creepy uncle as opposed to sexual harassment. Right. So even the woman who made the first allegation when she published about this, I'm spacing her name right now. It's bad.
Lucy Flores.
Yes. Lucy Flores. Even what she said is, she's like, look, I want to be clear that he didn't sexually harass me. He was just, it was inappropriate, and it made me extraordinarily uncomfortable in terms of his physical kind of contact. Right. And then there's like, you know, now there's all these loops of these YouTube videos going out there of all the times that he's like, you know, been petting little girls' hairs and have their hand around their waist. And it's been, you know, it feels like creepy uncle was a little handsy. I want to be clear. I'm not excusing that at all. But I just think we should also be clear that, you know, that's kind of what's going on. And frankly, I don't think there's room for someone like that in this campaign.
No. And like, I mean, I think that like this has changed. You know, I was reading stuff the other day about like the research that went into like the video that was found with Ed Shute from 1989 making an inappropriate joke to a news reporter. Right? Did you see that?
Didn't see that. No.
Basically, American Bridge found a video of Ed Shute. It was tipped off to them. Like a 30-second clip of like a B-roll footage, like a hot mic during an interview, and he tells a woman that, hey, the woman's like, can you move a little bit closer? And he goes, oh, I'll do anything you want. Maybe if we turn his camera off, we'll be all that and more, and something like a really creepy, like, gesture back in the 80s. And it's like it's amazing how like that stuff was acceptable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was just like, you just never say anything like that. Like, it's, even to like people who are your friends, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's not something.
Right.
But it's also seems like Biden's first like, or second response was, hey, I'm sorry for my response. Just the way things were. Like, I mean, and that's just not an acceptable excuse.
No, but here's the thing, right? I actually
saying like the social mores back then have changed. Right. Like, that's just how it was. I mean, no, but like, you're also having like a new crop of like generation of voters who are like, any type of stuff like that is like unacceptable. Like, I as a society, yes. Like, I mean, like, we've had like platonic touching, like that type of stuff. Like, but there's a line that gets crossed. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing, right? So, I mean, I had a student in a class this week actually bring this up. She's an awesome student. She's been in several of my classes and, does a lot of kind of work around gender issues and things like this and about pay equity and things like this. And she was like, you know, this is just, she's like, it was so creepy, right? She was like disturbed by it, right? And justifiably so, right? And that seemed to be the overall response of most of the students in the class, right? When we were kind of talking about this stuff. And so that's kind of really important. And I think that the fact that Biden, and I do believe that Biden thinks in his head that he didn't do anything wrong, right? And that is precisely, that is precisely what the problem is.
Yes.
Right? It's like, that is exactly it. It's like, I think that in his mind, he's just like a loving guy.
Like they
just like, There you go. For example, right?
Sorry, that derailed the conversation.
No. Yeah. But it's true. I mean, it's like, so this is, I think that, you've heard me say on the podcast before is like, when Biden was first looking like seriously to get in the race, I'm like, look, he should just hang it up now. Like he should just kind of like go out now and like turn over and not try to kind of, like get that one last thing on his list that he always wanted.
Was sitting down with someone over the winter. We were talking about the presidential campaign and, they asked me what I thought about the campaign. And I said, my top three would be Bernie, Warren, or Sherrod Brown, right? Like the second tier, like the only other person outside that I would deem acceptable is Kamala Harris, like in that other, like in outside of like that circle of things, candidates. And we started talking about Joe Biden and, I saw Joe Biden a couple times this past year, did not look healthy at all.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Physically worn down. And that's just from campaigning for the midterms and stumping
right.
for people.
Campaigning
like,
for other people. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, stumping for other people. And it's, I mean, yeah, he still has that fight in him and still people still love him and bring him out. But like, I think it was aptly put, like, it's going to be like Saving Private Ryan when he jumps in.
Yeah.
Uncle Joe is going to get the knives are coming out, like, and the knives are already coming out for Biden. And it's not just from Bernie people either. Like the knives are coming out from like, it's going to be like, Julius Caesar and, in Shakespeare, A2 Brute. Like, it's just everyone going to be like fucking stabbing him in the forum.
I've got my eyes on Kirsten Gillibrand. Right. I mean, she's the one who called out Al Franken.
Yeah.
Right. For
or
what
Liz
that
Warren.
Is. What's that?
Or Liz Warren.
Yeah. I think she's totally going to. I think Liz Warren. But I mean, like what Gillibrand.
I think Liz Warren's waiting to get on the debate stage with Biden.
Oh, man. She's
like,
totally. Never been friends. Right. But I mean, Gillibrand's important. Right. Is because I mean, she's kind of in the center of the party. Right. I mean, she's kind of like, and kind of much more kind of moderate voice and all this kind of stuff. But she's, her brand is very much right. Kind of coming out of like the Me Too. Right. And that's kind of when you put her on the stage, I don't care if she's like closely aligned politically with someone like Biden. Right. In terms of policy stuff. I mean, Biden has been like extraordinarily good on policy questions when it comes to like, kind of women's rights, kind of sexual assault, all that kind of stuff. Right. But how do you as Kirsten Gillibrand not call Joe Biden out too as well? Like you called out Al Franken and I'm sure she's going to.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, so when if you're Biden, like where you've got no friends on that stage. Right.
No. And it's like you're going to I think everyone also realizes like they're going to want to end his campaign as quickly as possible. Like and it's also like some people are in for the sake of your like own like humiliation. Don't run like.
Right.
Like you're going to get humiliated and he will. And it's going to be. I mean, some people desert. Some people want to go out the way they want to go out and Biden. Looks like he wants to go out in a slaughter.
Yeah, whatever.
Like,
it's your call, buddy. That's all I got to say. Everybody, you're all also going to need to learn how to say booted edge, right? So, and it's apparently boot. I guess it's on his Twitter account too. Boot, as in a boot, and then edge, booted edge. Right. So there you go. Surprisingly well, the polls this or not the polls in the fundraising.
How is Beto doing fundraising?
You know, I haven't heard a whole lot about him. It's interesting.
Who? Crickets?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you mean, wait, you mean for Beto? Has he even released his numbers yet? I don't think he has he?
I heard he's looking for a coffee shop to go to.
Yeah, well, he needs a table to stand on. I mean, how can you possibly tell the world, Sean? How can you tell the world that we need to go and explain to them that our numbers, our fundraising numbers, here's what they are?
So I also didn't realize that Buttigieg also has a book out right now. Yes, so yes. So he might just be on a book tour.
Hey man, so does Yang. Yang 2020, man. Yang 2020. It looks like he is going to make the debates. Yang.
Nice.
And what's his face? What's that guy's? I always forget his name. He's the guy. He's MSNBC. He was a former Wall Street guy, a ball guy.
Ali Velshi?
Yeah, Ali Velshi. Right? Ali Velshi did an interview with Yang the other day about his UBI. And the fact that it was really interesting interview. And the guy is actually, he's pretty clear about what he's there to do. Right, is like to put UBI right on the agenda, and to kind of like to bring that forward. And he's actually well spoken and kind of like very thoughtful. So it's going to be really interesting. I hope he gets on the stage because he's going to be really interesting because nobody knows who this guy is, right? And I think he's actually going to get some bumps from once he gets up on the stage and starts talking about his ideas. But we'll see. We'll see. He's not just he's not just the kind of fringe that go out there and yell out that. He's very thoughtful and is thinking a lot about what is coming, right? And he comes out of Silicon Valley and all that kind of stuff. He's very aware of what's going to be kind of impacting us in terms of robots and all that kind of stuff. So,
and one of the things it's like, yeah. Are you going to get a Hickenlooper?
I'm going to get them all. I'm collecting them. Yeah, that's what I keep on holding up my Yang 2020 bumper sticker. So that's because there's so many candidates. I mean, I don't know if I'm ever going to live through another election that's going to have this many candidates. So I'm just going to collect all the bumper stickers and all the stickers and stuff from all the candidates.
I am glad that like I still got my Bernie sticker on my car from earlier. So
yeah. Oh, crazy. Well, last thing I want to mention before we go to the PA focus.
I got to take a phone call real quick.
Yep. Go ahead. Sean has got a lot to do today. So, right now he's going to take his phone call and so we're going to close it out a little bit. So you'll hear him talking in the background there. But anyways, last thing I want to mention before we go to the break is that, at the Highlander School, now it's called the Highlander Research and Education Center, but the Highlander School, which was absolutely instrumental in, it is like the longest standing institution in the United States that is devoted to radical organizing. The Highlander School figured like very largely in my own research for my dissertation. And I was first introduced by Highlander from a friend of mine, from Doug Riker Powell. I was in a grad school with Peggy Riker Powell and her husband, and Peggy's one of my best friends, and her husband Doug, kind of was there too as well. We hung out all the time, and Doug is just like this amazing, just amazing. He's also from Tennessee. And he first told me about Highlander, and I remember reading about it. It's like, how is it that not every American knows everything about Highlander? Because it is the most amazing organizing institute that existed. It used to be in kind of like, it was like Eagle Rock or something, Eagle Ford, something like that, in Tennessee. And it was destroyed by fire because they had kind of multiracial organizing taking place in the 30s and 40s and things like this. They did all sorts of training for civil disobedience and kind of community-based organizing that led up to the civil rights movement. So you had the birth of SDS came from up there. Martin Luther King Jr. got training down there. Rosa Parks did a two-week training stint down there before the Montgomery bus boycott. It was so central. The whole idea, We Shall Overcome, was a song that came out of Highlander. It was kind of rewritten at Highlander for the civil rights movement. It's been such an integral part in terms of American social movements and American radical history. And yet we know nothing of it, which is telling. But anyways, this past week, the main office building, right, at their new office, they're in Knoxville, Tennessee now, got burnt down. It got burnt down, and when they were going through the ashes and looking at it, they found white power symbols kind of etched around around the space. So once again, you see that these cycles repeat, and you have the racist going after the organizing, right, as they will. So keep an eye on that, because Highlander has been such a feature of American radical tradition. So we're going to help rebuild, that's for sure. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Want to remind you, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Just go to patreon.com/RC Press today. Become a member as little as $5 a month. We'll be back with our PA focus right after this little break. God.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1954. It began what some have called the longest major strike in U.S. labor history. The strike was against Kohler, the Wisconsin-based manufacturer of bathroom fixtures. 2 years before the strike, the workers had formed Local 833 as part of the United Auto Workers. They wanted the right to join the union of their choice, improved wages, and recognition of seniority. When the company refused to bargain in good faith, the members voted to strike. On the first day of the strike, 3,000 workers marched around the plant. Few could have imagined when they walked off the job that many of them would not return for 6 years or even longer. The Kohler Company remained unwilling to negotiate. As the days turned to weeks, then into months, sometimes violence broke out between the scabs and the strikers. But what sustained the strikers was the strong sense of solidarity and community they built together. One pamphlet produced by the union had a picture of a baby on the cover. Above the baby was written, "All my life, my daddy's been on strike to make my future better." Finally, in 1960, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that the company had not followed bargaining laws. It ordered the company to let 1,400 striking workers return to work and to pay back wages. Another 6 years would pass before the issue of payment would be resolved. But in the end, the company had to pay $3 million in back pay and another $1.5 million in pension payments. At the 60-year commemoration of the strike, Local 833 President Dave Boscher declared, "I stand here in awe of the sacrifices of these people." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is our PA focus, and happy trails in Pennsylvania this week.
Yeah, we had a really important special election go down in Western PA.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Sean previewed last week, saying that there was a good chance that the Democrats were going to pick this up and winner. Pammy Ovino defeats D. Raja.
Yes.
Pretty cool.
Yes. I guess there's a lot of like different takes from this. One, big shout out to labor and all the volunteers who made this happen. It's also like it seems like the Democratic Party is starting to win these races that they should have been winning for the past, like, you know, since the new maps have been in play. You know, I feel like the Democrats have lost seats. They really should not have lost, even with new gerrymandered Senate district, Senate map, House and Senate maps. Like, they should have been able to repel some of the defeats that happened out in Western PA. And we're now seeing Democrats starting to pick seats back up out there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the key difference is this time they put some effort into it. Right? Do you remember this for a while? We had a friend of ours who I don't know if he wants to tell us, but showed us a map of Pennsylvania, and all the congressional districts, and looked at the spreads in each one of these districts, and how many of those districts the Democrats were actually running candidates, and it was disgusting. there was no one even being run, right?
Well, it's also the type of thing like you don't. I mean, like, there's really not like an infrastructural support. I mean, like, also it's like if a district 70-30. I mean, those either candidates not going to run or they're not going to get support. and stuff like that. It's, I mean, I don't find out like, but the thing is, it's like not going competitive in areas that you should be competitive in is also a big problem. Like, I don't mind there not people not going contested. I got a problem with like uncontested races in parts of the state where you could actually pick up a seat.
But the point was, is like they wrote off everything. Right. I mean, they,
I mean, I feel like they also had no strategy in 2014. And well,
this was before 2014. I'm saying this is been a long standing problem, right? The Democratic Party in the state of Pennsylvania has basically gone and put all its eggs in Harrisburg, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and then, you know, a few races around the state. Right. And then they were comfortable with that. Right. And they let that go. So, look, we look at the race. We look at some of the races that we followed, right? That we followed like on this podcast, right? They were most likely not winnable, right? Several of them, but they did a hell of a lot better than they ever could have or they ever thought they could have, right?
I mean, when was this?
This is past election, 2018.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's a big deal, right?
And, yeah. And I also think you also had like a lot of people run. I mean, it's also like, people tend to step up more in wave elections to run. Like the previous high watermark for the Democrats this past year with candidates running was 2006. Right when the pay raise happened, like the pay raise scandal. So like this past election, voter apathy. You had a lot less apathy with people.
I don't buy voter apathy.
Buy apathy. But
voter apathy is only apathy when there's nobody talking to them.
But also, like, this is the type of stuff where people aren't going to, like, people have to step up and run, right? They can't wait on like the party recruiting them to run either.
Well, no, they need to step up and run. But guess what? If they're going to step on the run, they need to have support from people who can help them train them how to do it. Right. That's what I'm talking about. That's the infrastructure.
And there are
stuff.
Groups out there that are doing that now, too.
Now there are. Exactly. That's my point. That's changed dramatically.
And a lot of those groups are going to be our independent groups outside of the party with the union trainings that are going on. What's the one women's group that Emerge?
Uh-huh.
Is one. They won like they had like five or six candidates win. But yeah, like it's. But I mean, like with this special election. You know, I feel like I don't feel like under like previous leadership with the party, you would have seen this type of get out the vote drive.
That's for exactly, a special. Exactly.
Like, I mean, I feel like with Growing gone, you have new leadership in the Democratic Party. You also have people like Tom Wolf is very popular out in Western PA. I mean, Fetterman was out there. He's very popular. He was out there for the past 2 weeks. I mean, even like Katie Muth and Tim Carney from Delco were out there knocking on doors.
Yeah, and labor provided a huge, huge part of the ground game.
Yeah, and yeah, that's right. And also what really was also Laura Putman put out on Twitter that most of the election, like most the spots that went blue were your poor working class areas. And most of the spots that went red were your rich parts of the district.
There you go.
Which pretty much goes against that like realignment theory, like that the party's going through with the rich suburbs out in Western PA.
You mean they didn't find their unicorns out there? That's not one of the election for them.
But no, I mean like they went out there and they knocked on doors in the poor parts of the district and they turned out voters, like, which is shocking. And how elections. You turn out more people than the other side and win.
There you go. You're making my point for me that I was making at the beginning, where you're giving me all sorts of problems with, but that's exactly my point, right? This is what was different, right? And you know, I say here's the other thing. Here's where the other thing, where the other dividends get paid, right? Is if, I don't know if you saw her her acceptance speech, right? But Pammy Ovino, but basically what she did, all around her was like all like labor folks, right? And she in her acceptance speech said like, you know, thank you to organized labor. Thank you these folks here, like who actually made this campaign possible. I look forward now into representing this district and you and putting your issues forward, right? That's it right there. Right. The people who show up and you're going to show that you're going to get you elected. Now you're going to actually that representative is now connected. right? That representative now wants to kind of give back, and your issues have been highlighted because you showed up for them. You know, I mean, Labor's got a long history of showing up, but I think in this context, man, it's a big deal.
And it's amazing to see how much Labor invested, like, in Western PA this past couple of years, this past year with Connor Lamb winning, being Rick Saccone, a race that should, like, again, he won because the Republicans picked an extremely incompetent candidate. And now he's going to be a congressman for life at this point. You have Pam Iovino, who just won. DeRaja was a hated candidate, never won a race, like a big statewide, a big race.
He's a chair of the Allegheny Republican Party, right?
And he's treasurer of the statewide party.
There you go.
So he's a self-made, well, I'm not using the term self-made millionaire, but he's extremely rich. He's the treasurer of the party. So they picked him because the party couldn't raise money. Because the Senate Republicans are completely out of money, and pretty much like he ran simply because he could self-fund himself.
Yeah.
And there was no really strong support for him there. But like, again, a few years ago with someone like DeRaja, who doesn't have support of the local party, but is just running because he can self-fund his race and take that burden off the Republican Party, he wins that election. 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Point made.
Yeah, no, I mean, like these, yeah, like the Republicans aren't getting away with it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a good deal. It's a good deal. I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it.
So, I mean, again, so I guess with math now, this puts the Senate in play. Tom Killian is going to be a Republican that's going to get wiped out down Delco. He's the last remaining Republican in that county. He had the good fortune of not being up for re-election on this past year. So he has to wait 2 more years to get taken out. And then Democrats got to pick up 2 more seats to flip the Senate, to have a 25-25 split.
It's exciting. It's exciting, I'm telling you.
Republicans went from a supermajority to potentially losing the Senate in less than 2 years.
There you go.
So,
there you go. I love it. Love it.
And we need one of those chambers to redraw the maps.
Yep. Well, there was an interesting, you know, Mike from PA, who calls in the Majority Report. He was on there, and they're back and forth on that question about why is it that you don't have somebody's moving forward to sue to sue about redistricting of the state stuff? Because remember, the Supreme Court kind of like basically redrew the maps to make them more fair, but that was for congressional districts, like, you know, the national congressional districts, like for the House, for House seats and stuff. Whereas, but all the lines for the state elected officials, the House and the Senate, for the state of Pennsylvania, they stayed the same. And so Sam Cedar was asking a question about, like, well, why is it that no one sued on that? And what Mike from PA was basically saying was like, well, look, the deal is, you know, 2020 is coming up, right? And looking for to really kind of, you know, for a big win here in 2020. And that may be actually, you know, so you're not going to require, right, the courts in order to make that determination, because the Democrats are going to be in the majority. That was kind of his take on it. And then if they don't, right, and then if that doesn't happen, then, you know, you can file lawsuits at that point. So it's kind of an interesting take on it.
Like, at that point, I mean, so like with the new maps that are going to be drawn,
right?
Even with the state and county levels, I think that they're going to have to take into accordance what the Supreme Court said.
Exactly.
So like the maps will be fairer from that standpoint. So,
right. It's very cool. Very cool. You kind of your tweet seemed to kind of make it throughout into some of the media. Like, I saw you on Penn Live, Sean.
Wait, you mean Capital Star?
Oh, was it Capital Star? I thought it was a Penn Live. Wasn't Penn Live have it too as well?
Pittsburgh City Paper had it. I don't read Penn Live that much anymore.
Okay, no. Okay, I guess it was Capital Star.
But in case you missed it, Mike Terzai, wonderful human being.
Yes. All human beings are wonderful, Sean.
All babies are beautiful.
It's all the, you know, it's just the far left Nazi eugenicists that are the problem. Right?
So, I guess I should read this.
That's why I'm befriend.
There you go.
So this is from the Penn Capital Star. I think this is one of my favorite like reads of this situation so far. Aides to House Speaker Mike Terzai on Monday were trying to explain away remarks the Allegheny County Republican made to an anti-abortion group, which seemingly compared foes of a controversial proposal to ban abortions based on a diagnosis of Down syndrome to the Nazi regime, quote unquote. Quote, none of us are perfect. What's perfect? What is perfect? What is allowable as a human being? Terzai said it's in the 60-second video shared by Twitter on Twitter by progressive activist Sean Kitchen.
Sean Kitchen!
So like, oh, please tell us, far left, since you seem to have a judgment on this. Terzai, who is vocally opposed to abortion rights, continued to scowl crossing his face. A scowl crossing his face.
Yeah, and you heard, we played the sound in the intro today, and so you could hear it in his voice. But man, you go to the link in the show notes and go watch the video, because it's like the look on his face, it's like this petulant kind of like meh look on his face too as well, that just makes the whole show.
A full-length 17-minute video of Terzai's remarks posted by the Pennsylvania Catholic Conference places Terzai's opposition to abortion rights in a broader historical context, making a mention of Robert Casey. It also says the House Speaker talking about the proposed Down syndrome abortion ban. Terzai's spokeswoman, Christine Goldbeck, accused Kitchen of taking the Republican leaders remarks out of context. Watch the whole video, she said.
There you go. Sean, you're a very bad man.
So, are they still Nazis?
Yeah, no. If you watch the whole video, what actually happens is the words that he says earlier on in the video become erased in your mind and replaced with correct.
Now, I should say this. Like, I got this video from the Catholic Conference Twitter page.
Yep.
So, like, it wasn't like I went there and found this video and posted, like, took the video myself and posted it online. The Catholic Conference posted the fucking video like online. Posted
exactly that clip?
Yes.
There you go. There you go. So end of story, out of context, people, right? He was there speaking, because that was one of the groups that was like
sponsored, right? What's that?
They were one of the sponsors of that event.
Yes. So Real Alternatives is the crisis pregnancy center, a faux pregnancy center that some of the DSA chapters across the country have been going after and really just picketing outside and preventing women and stopping women from going there, because they put up these fake facades and, you know, like, they actually inform women and tell them, no, go to the Planned Parenthood. Here's where it's located. This is where you can get these services at. And like, they've actually, you know, have done that to Real Alternatives. One last part of this I want to read. In a statement, Representative Dan Frankel, a Pittsburgh Democrat whose district includes the city's Squirrel Hill neighborhood and Tree of Life Synagogue, criticized Terzai's remarks, saying he feels strongly that we should keep casual mentions of the Nazi regime out of our good faith policy debates. At a time when we were seeing a resurgence in actual Nazi ideology rooted in the same white supremacy that led to the extermination of 6 million Jews, I feel strongly that we should keep casual mentions of the Nazi regime out of our good faith policy debates, Frankel, who is Jewish, said. Frankel said he and Terzai agree that every person deserves dignity and respect. That's why we desperately need increased resources for families who do the important work of taking care of children with disabilities.
Medicare for all.
What's that?
Medicare for all.
Did I hear that? Like, was that the wind?
Yeah, Medicare for all. I hear Terzai is going to support UBI and Medicare for all now, because all humans are special.
And he's going to support cash assistance for poor people.
Totally, totally.
Housing subsidies.
Totally.
He's going to fix the backlog.
There's one problem though, Sean. You know, one thing that really just kind of annoys me about what you just read. You know, I wish Frankel did not take Terzai out of context. I mean, how do you say it better than what he said? You know what I mean? It's like, there you go. There's the issue. There's the issue, idiots. Right? It's like, no. Terzai said more. That's basically what they said to you. Sean Kitchen only focused on this. Terzai said more in his speech, right? That's all they said. They didn't say that, oh, the later
– I'm sorry, but like –
he goes back and apologizes and says that he never should have made that. No.
You know what else was taken out of context?
Tell me.
Mike Terzai said that, you know, voter ID was going to get Pennsylvania to Mitt Romney. Voter ID. Done. That was taken out of context.
Totally out of context. You know who took it out of context, Sean?
The Pennsylvania Supreme Court took it out of context.
No. Far left Nazi eugenicist took it out of context.
Who?
Just far left Nazi eugenicists like you took it out of context.
Yes. Well, do you know the Nazis were socialists?
Yeah. Well, oh, God. Yeah. That's been bounce around here. It's crazy. Cool events coming up here. You know, we've got Bernie Sanders is going to be in Pennsylvania, Bethlehem, for a town hall. That is going to be hosted by Fox, which has got a lot of kind of like liberals really pissed off that he's
I'm sort of like in the middle about this. I think it's a good idea. Like, that's where I'm leaning towards.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like, there are a lot of people who watch Fox News, like my dad, who would fucking vote for Bernie Sanders in a heartbeat. Like, I don't realize, like, I think people don't realize there's more people out there like my dad who, like, union member his whole entire life voted for Trump because he was pissed off at Clinton, but would have voted for Bernie in the general.
Yep. Well, I mean, we'll see. I'm just going to wait and see how this thing goes. I mean, it's like,
I think his counter messaging is on point and could like, look, he's one of the people that can stand up to them and not get sucked into a trap.
No, totally. No, he's got everything going for it. Like, the argument for that's coming, you see, from liberal circles is basically, you know, they should boycott Fox for all this kind of stuff and not kind of like help legitimize their platform. Frankly, there's a bunch of
those. Like, that's coming from Donna Brazile.
Well, this is what I was going to say. A bunch of these critiques, I think, are very disingenuous, right? In terms of how they're being offered, they're sounding like they're kind of holier than thou stuff, but I don't think that's what it is at all, right? So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. But it's going to be interesting. I was looking to see if there's tickets or anything like that available. I haven't seen anything posted yet on it. But that's going to be kind of interesting. And Sanders also kind of made another connection to Pennsylvania this week too as well.
Yes, he hired Becca Rass as his national field director for the campaign. Becca worked for Jess King's campaign. She's married to Jonathan Smucker. Smucker is leads Lancaster Stands Up. So, and she worked for Bernie in 2016, but in a lot smaller capacity.
Yeah, and everyone that talks about her, you see all the interviews about her going forward, they talk about her as just an amazing organizer.
Yes. I mean, like, just like, I think we said this many times, like, Jess King's campaign, the way it was ran was a long shot, but like, it fundamentally changed the way like campaigns should be ran. When I interviewed for that job with Jess King campaign, first thing was said, it's a unionized position.
Yep.
Right? Like, you're guaranteed to work 50 hours a week, up to 50 hours a week, sometimes 6 days a week. You're guaranteed at least 1 or 2 days off, and you'll know it, like, in a couple weeks in advance, like, of what your off days will be like. You're covered, you're getting paid, you have insurance and stuff like that. Yeah, no, they ran a really good campaign. And now she is national field director. And, I mean, they knocked on like 50 or 60,000 doors.
Amazing. Yeah, really.
I mean, like, in the middle of rural Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And
it's kind of one of those districts that kind of, I think, the former Democratic Party would have basically have not kind of run anybody against because it's probably too much of a long shot. And Sean would have been totally okay with them not running a candidate because, you know, it's a long shot.
They ran a candidate. And she decided to carpetbag.
Yeah, she did.
Her way into Harrisburg and didn't even get on the ballot.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Good thing.
Handed in trash petitions.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Oh, man. Well, hey, to close out today, we've got it's funny because I don't know if people have seen this all over the state, but it turns out that Pennsylvania was one of the kind of like the test markets for the robots. Right.
Yes, giant, I've seen these and I hate them.
Yeah. I mean, giant food stores. I live in Perkasie, right? We got a Little Giant right here, and there was one in the Little Giant, right? Moving around, right? And what was disgusting was, I got to see if I can find this one quote. The guy, they interview this guy, and a Washington Post has this article about this, and they refer to the where is this guy? Where is this guy? Basically, the parent company of. I'm just not going to be able to find it quickly enough. But the parent company of Giant Food Stores, which is a Dutch company, they interviewed him as part of one of these stories. And like his title is like manager of like I don't know, like efficiency workplace, something like this. So it's about technologizing the entire workspace. So Giant was also, you know, kind of like went full whole hog on the kind of like self-checkout stuff. Right. I still refuse to go to those things, like unless I'm absolutely forced to. There's a Giant in Souderton, which I'll go to sometimes because they're open 24 hours. And if you go there after hours, you cannot actually check out with an actual person. You have to go through this self-checkout. So despite the fact that Giant and like Walmart and all those things, this is not going to displace workers. I can tell you already, I've watched it displace workers, and that's going to happen, which is precisely why UFCW was like saying, no. We are not in favor of this. This is not about freeing up workers' time so they can have so customers can have a better shopping experience. No, it's about putting people in the service of robots. And I was actually in my local store and watch what happened. These things go around. They scan shelves. They scan things to see if there's like for stock stuff and if there's any spill. Like they can detect that too as well. And I watched it happen, but there was like this was when I was in Quakertown one actually, where there's a spill and it stops and it alerts like caution spill on floor. It automatically alerts some sort of office. And then there's an announcement for a human to get over with the robot so it can clean up the mess. Right. So, I mean, it's like this stuff is coming. So, it was just pretty wild. I just watched, our tech guy, Seth, he posted a picture from Doylestown, right, about the Giant there with this. I saw it in Perkasie and Quakertown, and now it just turns out that they had such success with these robots that they're doubling down, and they're going to be kind of putting them in all stores all over the place. So if you are a Giant worker, be prepared. Be prepared. UBI, Yang 2020. Great. Sean, anything else going on in Pennsylvania?
No, nothing really.
Nothing really. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this quick break. Sean has to get to going. He's got stuff to do. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coops. Let's go! We talk about space news, we talk about beer, talk about any other cool things that are kind of going on. Let me get right off the bat with the space news of the week. Cool stuff with looking for a lunar South Pole landing for NASA's 2024 Back to the Moon goal. The thing that could keep an eye on here and on my kind of like persistent insistence on paying attention to galactic capitalists. There's been some probes that have gone and looked at what's happening on the moon, and they're finding a lot more water on the moon than they thought existed, particularly by the South Pole. In the South Pole, so you have kind of more concentrated kind of water ice. They're thinking about 3 feet under the surface, you're going to have even more. And they're looking to land over there in part because there's a ridge on the South Pole that you could actually kind of build in and build bases around there that would provide a little bit of protection against the radiation from the sun, which is precisely where China builds its base in Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Moon. So just I was like watching this stuff unfold. I'm like, there you go. Kim Stanley Robinson once again is kind of like ahead of the game. The thing that's the why it's important to pay attention to, because yes, obviously water is like necessary for human beings to live, but really what they're after is they're after the water on the moon so that they can make rocket fuel, right, with kind of autonomous factories on the moon so they can use that as a launching place. So, I mean, Sean's laughing like I'm just making all this shit up, but it's like it's for real. And you watch. I'm telling you, before you die, you are going to see this.
It's not going to happen.
You're going to watch. You're going to see it. Mark my words.
It's going to be Trump's lasting legacy.
It's have nothing to do with Trump. Look, once this ball gets rolling, like they're not going to stop it unless you have a major turnover in terms of national priorities. And that may happen. But I'm telling you, there are billions and billions of dollars here. And if they go ahead and they privatize the International Space Station, they're looking at five private companies to build the lunar module, which will basically the lunar gateway, which will be basically the space station around the moon. Right. They look at Lockheed Martin, you know, all the key players, right? Boeing, right? All the key players in kind of military industrial complex stuff. They're going to invest billions of dollars. If they privatize the International Space Station and make that all kind of commercial projects, it's all going to be dependent on the big dollar, the big dollars. And then once you free that up, right, you're going to kind of like these people, they are messianic about kind of getting out and having this kind of development. So you watch, you mark my words, man, mark my words. You're going to be telling your grandkids about this. You're going to be like, I remember I used to just like zone out when Mahoney was talking about this stuff. But damn it, he was right. Right. So, yeah. So that's cool. As I mentioned at the top, that there will not be anytime soon a new spacesuit so that two women can actually do a spacewalk together. Nope. They're going to have to wait on that. Hillary Clinton got really pissed off about that. She's like, get a new suit, right? And tweeted that out. The thing I want to point attention to,
she's still around?
Well, at least her Twitter account is. I don't know if she is. So whoever's running that these days. The crazy thing about this, like, you know, we've been focusing a lot on climate change for the past several weeks, and we will continue to do so because we're all going to die. No, because the crisis is real. We have less than 12 years to kind of turn the ship around to make a future somewhat livable. And to watch the developments and how people are responding to this, the United Nations just had a roundtable in New York City about mitigation of the climate impacts, right? Because we're at the point right now, there's already going to be significant coastal flooding, even if we kind of like turn on a dime tomorrow and kind of like drastically cut carbon emissions. It's just like, you know, it's like turning a steamship. It's going to take too long, right? And as we've seen, despite the fact that there's been these kind of commitments, emissions have risen, right? Emissions from coal plants, the dirtiest of it all, have risen in the past year, right? So we're going to see these impacts coming forward. So they're looking at ways of how do you actually mitigate the worst of the impacts, because we know there's going to be massive amounts of displacement and refugee problems and all this kind of stuff. Well, the United Nations has got this company called Oceanics. They brought it in for as part of a discussion about the creating floating cities. They're literally modular towns and cities and villages that can be expanded, that they want to start building off the coast in kind of what is it, kind of Indonesia area and things like this, because they recognize that a lot of these islands are going to be underwater. So where are the people going to go? And they're looking to kind of plan by building these modules to actually house them. And so it just blew my mind that I'm like, oh my God, this is like Waterworld, right? Except like high class. And what's interesting about the way that it's all being marketed and the way it's being pitched, right? It's being pitched like, look, there's going to be all these people, right? In these areas that they're going to need someplace to go and their homes are going to be flooded. These islands are going to go under and you have, it's not like they're like billionaires that they can just go wherever they want. They're going to need someplace to go. So we need to start building these cities now, right? So that they can kind of, and there's all self-sustaining, like cities, all solar powered. They generate the power also from hydropower, all this kind of stuff. But if you think about it, is that my guess is going to be the refugees are not going to be going to these floating cities, right? At least the way that they look in their pictures at the Oceanics website, right? Those beautiful places. These are going to be like refuges for the rich. That's how this is going to work. It's going to be some crazy thing. It is going to be what the Peter Thiel model, like in some ways, which, you know, we'll see. So anyways, take a look at that stuff. It's just really, it's just crazy. It blows my mind to even see this stuff. Good news on the culture front. We've got Frank Herbert. If you've never read Dune, it's awesome. Kind of science fiction stuff too, as well. Was one of my favorites as a kid. I could still recite, "I shall not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the total death that brings total obliteration. I shall face my fear and let it pass over and through me. And when I am done, when I was gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain." There you go. Right, that was from Usul. Right. I had a white rat when I was in high school, and his name was Muad'Dib, which is based on the Dune. It was the mouse shadows, the name of the mouse shadow on the second moon of Arrakis. Right, so I'm a bit of a geek on this one. So they're making a new one that's coming out. I'm very excited. Last thing I'll say on this kind of like the kind of geeky front, one of my colleagues, Sandy Leonard, I just found this out. I didn't know this beforehand. But she's actually a co-creator of a role-playing game called Maji Monsters, which is kind of like a cross between Dungeons and Dragons and Pokemon. It's a really cool thing. I bought the game, right? They originally got funded successfully through Kickstarter. And so I bought the game, I brought it in, I saw the other day, said, "Sandy, I got to show you something." And I picked out the book and she's like, "You bought the book? I can't believe it." But it's a really cool game. So I'm just going to put a link for there. It's going to plug it. It's available through DriveThruRPG. It's a really interesting game. This summer, I'm going to actually spend some time kind of with my kids who are just starting to get interested in that kind of stuff and see if we can play that game. So definitely check it out. So, Sean, you've been taking some liberties with the outdoors and with your line of sight and your beautiful artistic sense of self this week.
Yes, I have. Just taking my new lens out and playing with it.
Yeah, he's been posting some great pictures too as well.
I like the one of the flower I took, the daffodil. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
That, yeah. I thought it was a lily at first. I don't know what the flowers are. I was like, "This is a lily, right?" And someone's like, "No, it's a daffodil."
Oh my god! That's funny. Yeah. So Sean's got some good pictures that are posted. So check out his stuff. We got. So
this lens. The it allows you to like. Since it's like the aperture and all is like a fixed aperture lens, allows you like zoom in really far, really close, and then it just like blows out the background really beautifully, which is great.
Yeah, some good stuff. A couple of things from Free Will this week. Akai Mash, that is going to be released on Saturday. It is brewed with 850 pounds of Akai puree, milk, sugar, and vanilla. Comes in at 7.5%. It's available in cans, 4-pack cans at both the Perksy location and Peddler's Village locations. And this Wednesday, they will be hosting the Toast to Cheese, which is they have it. It's hosted extra in their sour cellar. They have like to put up tables set up down there, and they have local cheese from Calkins Creamery in Honesdale, PA. And they pair that with they got a bunch of the sours that they're pairing it with, and some specialty toasts. And they have kind of small groups of people come down. You get a little tour of the area. It's part of their kind of like what do they call it? Their cellar pairing series. So check it out if you're looking for something to do. You can click on the link in our show in our descriptions. And tell you how to get tickets for it. The tickets I think are like $40, but it was worth it. Like my wife got, like I said, got it for me for my birthday one year, and it was nice. It was a nice time out. So, So, Sean, so you got lots to do today, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a Raise the Wage rally right after this at 12. So, in the Capitol, We the People, which is being put on by, like, the Budget and Policy Center people. So,
and I take it that you are bringing your camera.
Yes, I want to get a picture of Mark Price speaking if he speaks.
Yeah, I wanted you to get a picture of Mark Price tweeting, if you will.
Yes. So I actually have like a tweet like quote lined up like with Mark Price if he's speaking, you know, nice dramatic photo all the way zoomed in saying, "I vow to put all the millennials and send all the millennials to the gulag." With an endless supply of avocado.
Oh, there you go. And sriracha. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, hey, man, I know you got to get running, so I don't want to keep you too long. Anything else you got out for the good of the order?
No, nothing else. Oh, I was at Pizza Boy last week. I had a beer.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, I bought a 4-pack of their Floyd's Yacht Club, which was really good.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe I didn't put this in the notes. Man, you broke your streak.
Yeah. I went out last Friday, and I was like, fuck it.
It's like literally, if you all remember, if you go back and listen to last week's show, it's all like, 3 weeks, yes, I'm so proud of this. It's great. It's a feel better, blah, blah, blah. And then literally I get this message later on that night like, oh, well.
I was out walking around. It was warm out, and I decided to stop in at McGrath's, and they had the Allagash is back in the area for the first time in like forever.
There you go.
So Allagash White was on tap.
How could you say no?
Yeah, no, how could you?
Yeah, exactly.
So.
All right, man, we'll go raise the wage.
Yep.
All right, everybody, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for sticking with us. Want to remind everybody you can become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member as little as $5 a month, or you can just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click on the big blue donate button, and give us what you can. Absolutely fantastic. If people have noticed a couple of kind of like minor things, you might have noticed this already that I've begun actually posting the shows in addition to our regular podcast stuff. I'm actually posting them directly to our site as well. This is going to part of some of our kind of reboot. We also looks like we're probably going to have at least one more new writer come on board pretty soon. I know Dorcas, who published our first piece last month, has got another piece that's in the mix. We're going through the editing process right now. So do give us some give them support, share their stuff, let them know, kind of welcome to the Raging Chicken Press family. And I'm very excited about directions that we're going to be able to go from here. So there we go. Anyways, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We hope to see you all back next week, or hear you at least. We'll talk to you then.
See ya!
None of us is perfect. Like, first of all, what's perfect? What is perfect? What is allowable as a human being? Oh, please tell us, far left, since you seem to have a judgment on this, since you seem to hold any of us who regard the unborn child with dignity and protection as sort of, like we're just beneath them, right? Like, what do you know? Move into the 21st century. Isn't that what they're telling us? You know, to go with their sense of eugenics, like the Nazi regime, right? Is that really where it is? Well, here's the thing. Every single human being is beautiful.